Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and it is it's a beautiful day out, and it's a beautiful day in here too because we have a wonderful panel. It's the 3rd of March, and we will get started. Let me introduce the panel. I will tell you how you can become a part of our conversation, and then we'll actually get into said conversation. Joining me for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just good.
Good, good. Well, just good is okay. We'll take just good. Editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick, is with us this morning. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, and I'm really good.
Good. Excellent. Thank you very much for that. And now the pressure is on. Time Judy columnist Chris Churchill to top that.
I'm just okay.
It's all right.
The better been worse.
Yeah, all's good. Welcome to the program. A reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that you can join our program by simply emailing roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and be with us. We would love to read your letters. Okay, so let's move on to the topics at hand. We have several things to talk about, and I'm going to throw everybody a curveball and not start off with politics. Well, sort of politics, but not presidential politics, at least. And that is the White House vetting an Iowa judge. We have heard a lot about, of course, the absence of Antonin Scalia and his death and the filling of that seat and the back and forth between the White House and the Senate leadership. Now it seems that the White House is said to be vetting an Iowa judge for the Supreme Court seat. The woman being vetted is Jane Kelly, a federal appellate judge in Iowa, as a potential nominee for the Supreme Court. This comes as many, including our own New York Senator Chuck Schumer, who is on the Judiciary Committee and has called for the president to make an announcement sooner rather than later. So now Jane Kelly is a potential nominee for the Supreme Court, weighing a selection that could pose an awkward dilemma for her home state Senator Charles Grassley, who has pledged to block the president from filling the vacancy.
It's a beautiful thing. Want to know why? It's a beautiful thing because Grassley has to run for office this year.
Yeah.
And if people think he's behaving in an unconstitutional manner, and has been hypocritical because he was wildly for her when she went for her federal judgeship, it could cost him his election. Doesn't take much. You know, 5% can beat you, and it could be that.
Especially in a state like Iowa, which is one of those 50-50 swing states.
Right. Although
Grassley seems like a guy who's pretty well established. You know, he's not a first-term senator by any stretch.
No, that's true. But every once in a while, somebody comes along and says, okay, it's enough now.
Mm-hmm.
It's enough. You've been here too long.
You know, it's a brilliant move on Obama's part, but it's also a blatantly political move. And will the voters see through that and bring that to the fore as this progresses?
Yeah, that's a good point, Judy.
So meanwhile, and to your point, and going back to Senator Grassley in a Senate floor speech in 2013, Senator Grassley effusively praised Judge Kelly, a longtime public defender, just before she won unanimous confirmation to her current position on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. And what we keep on hearing these days is that just because you get an easy nomination for a court of appeals or a circuit court, it does not mean you will get an easy ride when it comes to the Supreme Court.
And nor should you, really. I mean, it's a much more important position, obviously. Just because you're qualified for one doesn't mean you're qualified for the other.
Yeah, I'm worried about the candidate herself. I mean, that the fact that this is this taints any real chances she has of getting on the court, you know, on her merits alone. I think it will be whatever candidate. Obviously, this is going to happen.
You think we've seen as political no matter what?
Right.
Yeah. Well, let me fight with columnist Churchill for a moment.
You know, let's get ready to rumble here.
Uh-oh.
You know, if I may.
It doesn't have to be a fight. It could just be a conversation. Right?
Well, when you were raised in my house, it's a fight.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so Chris, I guess the question when you say it takes a different standard for a Supreme Court justice than for a federal judge. These are the same people, these Republicans, who are insisting that these people be judicially competent. And all of these people who have made it, and by the way, they've held up a lot of federal judgeships, indicating that not everybody, by their standards, gets through. They can wait for a long time. I think it's all hypocrisy. I think they just can't stand the idea that it's going to be a 5-4 the other way court, and it's very political. I don't buy it for a second that it has anything to do with judicial competence. I think it's all about politics.
Well, I would agree it's about politics, yeah. Ultimately. But what I was trying to say, though, is, I mean, you talk about a federal judge, you're of a certain elite. But when you talk about the Supreme Court, that's a, you know,
a lifetime appointment.
Yeah, right. It's a super elite. one of only nine.
Really, really, really elite. Yeah.
You know, we have a brilliant audience, and I'm going to say Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Yes.
And it's going to be interesting to know how old he was when they visited upon him and said, enough is enough. I think 100, something like that.
Zero.
So our audience will check the facts and immediately, you know, say, Alan, you're stupid. You didn't know that.
And she's relatively young, too, I think.
Isn't 51, I think I just read 51 or 55.
Yeah, but the name of the game is to get him while he's young. Roberts will be there forever.
It's also good, I think, I mean, assuming that she got appointed, that she's from Iowa, I think there is a need for a little bit more geographic balance on the court. It's very heavily northeastern at this point. Five from New York City. Well, maybe four now that Scalia is gone. But
yeah, and Republicans are hoping, they're just rolling the dice that their guy gets into office, because if they don't, then the new Democratic president
is
going to make that nominee.
Which is so strange to me, because they don't have a guy.
Yeah, the guy could be Trump, and they're worried about who he's going to put on the court. They have no idea who's going to put on the court.
Right now, the polls are all showing the Democrat's going to win. Now, that doesn't mean the Democrat is going to win. The polls are all showing the Democrats going to win. However, not to introduce a subject which we were not charged with, there was a fascinating article in the Times about Hillary. That people aren't showing up to vote for Hillary, and that's because Bernie Sanders arouses a certain amount of passion in his followers. Fill an auditorium with 10,000 people or one of those places, but Hillary just doesn't have that sort of charisma that makes people want to lay down in front of the chicken truck for her. Chicken truck is a Pataki reference.
Right. Well, they're voting, right? They're voting for her, but they are not, they perhaps are not coming out, and there isn't the enthusiasm.
That's
how
you lose an election.
So
if your people don't come out, you know, you're either voting in the voting booth or you're voting by not coming out. You know, there's a passion for Bernie. I think there's a passion for Trump. I don't think there is a passion for Hillary.
So if you take Bernie out of the equation and it's just Trump, then will it then become, while perhaps we don't have that passion for Hillary Clinton, but we do have a passion for, and I'm speaking on the Democratic behalf, that the Democrats would say, okay, well, we have a passion not to get him elected.
Now, the problem is, of course, we go back to the court. So all day yesterday, after the ladies were here and talking about Hillary and how terrific she
Libby
was.
Libby and Rosemary.
Libby and Rosemary. How terrific they were. We were getting emails from people saying, I will never vote for that woman no matter what. I'm a Bernieite and I will never. Well, you get enough of those people, and I don't think it's possible. And then the court, you know, then this, because right now this is great fodder, don't you think, guys, for the Democrats to be able to say the Republicans are behaving in an infantile and non-productive manner in terms of our government.
Yeah, I think so. The problem with Trump, though, is that he throws everything kind of out of whack a little bit. I mean, you could say it's about the court, but then Trump sometimes signals that he would appoint somebody who's pretty moderate or liberal. So that kind of takes that issue away from the Democrats.
Sure, then you got to believe him because he's lied so much in the past.
Right, you have no idea what he's going to do. I mean, that's one of the things the Republicans are upset about. They don't know what he's going to do, and he really throws things out of whack. But the thing you have to worry about if you're a Republican is that maybe the Republicans don't come out for him because a good chunk of them don't like him.
Mr. Obama has publicly predicted that Republicans faced with a well-qualified candidate and a constitutional mandate to provide advice and consent will ultimately relent and allow hearings, which is different than actually confirming a candidate, but...
Well, they will only at that point when they're damaged. And they're going to be damaged in the polling. They're going to be damaged when they see that people deserting their senatorial candidates.
And we're already seeing that, right? We're seeing the damage as far as the polls go, that people are upset. And
you think they're going to be damaged by their refusal to allow this process to continue?
I absolutely do. I absolutely do. I think that, look, there are Democrats. There are Republicans. There are people who don't like, benefits. Who don't like, the way that society is organized. But in the end, everybody knows that in the Constitution, the president has a responsibility, and so do they, and they're not meeting it.
Right, and he has a 4-year term, not a 3-year term.
Well, yeah.
Right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll move on to other issues as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Cowan's Auctions, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations. George E. Heigl for consultations. 518-369-7994. And Oblong Books, Hudson Valley YA Society presents dazzling debuts from authors Goldie Moldavsky, Rebecca Podas, and Gavriel Savit, Sunday at 4 p.m. in Rhinebeck, ages 13 through adult. Oblongbooks.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion for this morning. We're talking about the Supreme Court. We have some letters. We'll get to those. And we will then get on to other topics after the news break at the bottom of the hour. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Chris Churchill, Judy Patrick, and Alan Chartok are here. Alan is at the mailbag and is opening them up as we speak.
I am. Eric writes, Republicans have not been accepting the fundamental principle of democracy since 2010. If you want to shape policy, convince a majority of voters that your ideas are better and win elections. A minority cannot be allowed to block the majority's view forever as long as fundamental rights of the minority are protected, which they are. Will the Republicans block nominees continuously if the Democrats win the White House in 2016? Interesting question, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you see? Good morning, panel. Obama was originally going to nominate the Republican governor of Nevada, but he promptly turned it down. Wouldn't any Republican or Republican-minded person he nominates or even suggests do the same thing and just turn it down to support the party line? Well, what do you guys think? I don't know.
I mean, it's a pretty great job. I think it's pretty sought after. I don't know that I would turn it down just to satisfy the political whims of the moment, you know?
And the moment, Chris, that you are nominated, you're in the history books.
Yeah.
Which you may not be otherwise.
Yeah, you might even have a verb named after you.
Be borked.
Borked, yeah.
Okay, so... Tito says, I believe it's Tito, anyway... Says, no, it is somebody else who doesn't sign their name. By the time New York has its primary, most of the candidates will be eliminated. Why do the whack jobs in Iowa and other states get to impact my choices? I'd like to see a national Super 50 primary to pick the candidates. I would, too. The problem, Anonymous, is that these states have now made major industries out of these primaries, and they're not about to give it up. I heard one guy from New Hampshire said if we had to set the primary the day after the general election, we would, in order to be the first one. So I think it's a great idea. It should be. You're right about that.
But if you have a national primary, I mean, think about the kind of money that we complain about money in politics now. If you had to run a truly national campaign right out of the gate, no kind of smaller under-the-radar candidate would ever really have a chance. I mean, that's the beauty of Iowa and New Hampshire is that it does give the little guys at least a fighting chance.
Jim says, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Senator Grassley also vote for Justice Kennedy's confirmation during the last few months of the Reagan presidency? The hypocrisy here is mind-boggling, says Jim. I have to get through all of these ads that come our way. And let's see here. Philip says, do you think there's a chance of a brokered GOP convention in which someone like Paul Ryan or Michael Bloomberg are drafted? What do you think, gang?
Absolutely.
Me too.
Maybe not Bloomberg, but a Paul Ryan or even a Mitt Romney, maybe. But I definitely think there's a chance of a brokered convention.
I want to talk about Mitt Romney and the speech he'll be making today, and we'll talk about that after the news break. But that's an interesting. He certainly isn't being quiet, is he?
No, and there are a lot of analysts who are adding up the votes and saying if Trump goes in a little bit short, they can do what they want, and that they may well. And there are so many of them who have put their lives and their careers and everything else on the line by denouncing Trump that they now have nothing to lose by going the distance.
There are a lot of Republicans, I think, who would rather have one term of Hillary than any of Trump at this point.
That seems to be the burbling effect, isn't it? A lot you're hearing more and more congressional representatives come out and saying that, and a lot on the other side too of saying that this is there was one representative on ATC on All Things Considered last night, and I don't remember her name now, but she was saying that I will support the Republican. I'll support the nominee. And they said, oh, so you'll support Donald Trump if he's the nominee? And she said, no, I said I will support a nominee. That's an interesting way to put it. Let's take a break. We'll be back in just a moment, and we will get to more letters, and we'll talk about Mitt Romney. We'll talk about some of the other Ben Carson is out of the race. I have to talk about that, of course. He's sort of out of the race. I don't know.
You know, he's out.
Figure
he's
that out. One
he's
out. We'll talk more about that. Alan Chartok is here. Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette. Chris Churchill of the Times Union. And we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we will finish up our business of the day after this short break. Good morning, and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your thoughts, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here, editor of the Daily Gazette. Judy Patrick and Times Union columnist Chris Churchill make up the group. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. So we are awaiting a speech later today given by former GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney, who is from Massachusetts and has been very outspoken in the last few days about his dislike and distrust of the Trump campaign. He is going to be making a speech this morning. The question is, will that have any effect on Donald Trump at all? You will remember just a few days ago, Mitt Romney said, much like a pre-Brewer stay tuned remark, of when you look at Donald Trump's tax returns, you will see bombshells that will change the course of this race. We have not heard anything since then, but we wait.
Nor are we going to get a look because Trump was
audited.
Because Trump was very specific about you wouldn't understand because it's very complicated, and I have many companies, and they all have to. I'm getting audited all the time, so no, you're not going to see it.
And it could be that Trump has $500 on his bank account.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
So Trump is a phony, a fraud, who is playing the American public for suckers. So that is Mitt Romney. Does he have an ulterior motive?
You know, when I've watched the establishment Republicans react to Trump, I wonder whether it's because he doesn't align with their conservative principles or if they are upset with what a lot of people think of Trump as a racist, a misogynist, a xenophobe.
I think it's all of the above.
You think it's a combination?
Yeah. And I think a guy like Mitt Romney does look at the tone and does get upset, too. I mean, he's a guy who's never sworn in his life, and then suddenly you have a you have a potential nominee who does nothing but swear and.
Of course, there was the matter of leaving the dog on top of the car when he took that.
Oh, the dog loved that.
Chris Churchill said that.
Yes. So anyway, dogs love fresh air, don't they?
See Churchill at dimejunion.com.
So Mitt has become the leader for the Republicans at this point?
Well, he's one of them. There are a lot of people speaking out, but the thing about Mitt is there may be, I'm a bit of a Freudian, you know, there may be a little guilt here because he came very close to going after that nomination himself. And remember, he let us all on and he told people he was going to. And he said he couldn't do it because the family wouldn't allow it.
And remember why one of the reasons he didn't was the presence of the seemingly formidable candidate named Jeb, who, as we all know, wasn't quite so formidable.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Still talking about throwing him into the California primary at this point or having him be that brokered candidate in the summer at the convention.
You know, it's one of the weird things about this primary. I mean, it makes a guy like Mitt Romney seem like kind of a elder makes him seem like a statesman. I mean, compared to the people who are running now, he seems like Reagan or something. You know, I mean, he seems big.
Yeah. Yeah, and you think at some point that's what the American public would be yearning for.
Yeah. But in terms of him giving a speech, I don't see how this changes anything. I think you've got 35% of the Republican electorate that's behind Trump and 60% that isn't. And that seems pretty locked in place. I don't think a speech by Mitt Romney or anybody else is going to make much of a difference at this point.
You know, I can't remember. Is he a really good orator?
Who, Mitt?
Yeah.
Not terrible, but not. Not going to move you to tears either.
Yeah,
that's what they need at this point.
Yeah, well, I don't know who that's going to be. Certainly isn't Marco Rubio, and it certainly isn't. I'm sorry, there's something wrong with my throat. It isn't Cruz. I don't see who they've got that's really great, and certainly Trump is not a great orator. He's just
he's entertaining.
He's entertaining.
Right.
He gives
bombastic
a speech that people
stuff.
Like to listen to, which is different.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the word speech is really what it is. It's kind of a rambling. Might
sort
go
of
here, like, might go there.
Kind of like the old Larry King USA Today column. Just kind of throw out
musings.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's go to some letters.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Doug says, is this Doug? I don't know if this is Doug. Yeah, I think so. He may be an ass.
Yes,
but an ass is
You're okay to say that?
Well,
yes.
You're okay, as long as it's the mule. It's the mule kind.
Okay.
But Trump got more votes on Super Tuesday against four opponents than Hillary got against one, says Doug. And then Frank,
so Marco Rubio, by the way. I mean, the turnout on the Republican side has been so heavy that you can say that almost about.
Which you would also expect it to be.
Right.
Because of the more of the contest aspect of it.
Mary Jo says,
yes.
Do you think low primary turnout by Democrats could be because we have two great candidates? I think it will be different in November. Well, maybe. Jerry says, hi, could Romney be looking for a draft at the convention? We've already discussed that. It's a possibility.
It is a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've indicated he's not going to endorse anyone today.
And then Tom from Chazy, that's where the river is, up a Chazy River. Okay. Dr. Shartok, great show today. Does the panel think the Republicans are in a catch-22? If they succeed in keeping the nomination from Trump, don't you think he'll run as a third-party candidate? Well, it's a fascinating question.
If they delay long enough, though, I mean, will that avenue still be open to them? It's not that easy to get on the ballot, right?
In the States, yeah.
Right. So if you keep this kind of an open question until July, is that when the convention is? July?
Late July, early August. Yeah. I don't know who's first.
It might make it tricky for him at that point.
A lot of people like Lucy from Amherst, one of my favorite places in the whole world. What do you think Trump will do if the Republican establishment denies him the nomination?
Well, can I Can sure. we talk about that for a second? So what does that mean? Because suddenly you are, I understand why the Republicans would be concerned. I understand why they would be doing what they're doing when they have a candidate like this. But he is still getting the votes.
He is still getting the
and
votes,
and so
yes.
what do you, so, well, what do you well, say? Sure. Screw democracy. We know better than you do,
well,
ladies
do that
and
all
gentlemen
the time.
Of the country.
They do that all the time.
Yes, but are people then going to, what? How much is that going to further damage an already damaged party?
People would be very angry if they do that. There's no doubt about it. But what they could say is, listen, he's only getting 35% of the vote. And a lot of that vote seems to be people, a lot of these are open primaries. These are people who are coming in as Democrats or independents and voting for him. They could say, our party is not behind him. We're going in a different direction. And people will be furious. I mean, it'll be quite a thing to do. But
with Donald Trump leading the charge, who I'm not sure we want to see at a full fury, but
right, his head might pop off.
Yeah, but a lot of people are raising this point. Trump indeed has gotten these votes. The people have elected him.
He has.
They haven't elected him.
Well, no, Judy's right.
You gave me a heart attack.
Yeah,
what
Judy's right. They have
what did
elected,
I sleep through?
They have elected him in the primaries. So
as
in
their candidate.
But Trump has problems, right? I mean, Trump right now is seeming to be only an East Coast candidate. He's not doing well anywhere west of the Mississippi. He lost Texas. He lost Oklahoma. He lost Iowa. He lost Minnesota. He lost Alaska. He's doing well in this belt from Massachusetts into the Deep South. I mean, that's not the whole country.
No,
that's not the whole country by a long.
And the others aren't doing as well as he is.
Right. That's true.
I mean, I think it's important to remember that we have heard from a telephone number, Peter. You talk like people from Massachusetts liked Mitt. We hated him and did not trust him. Thank you, Peter. I live in Massachusetts. I can't say that I hated him, but I can.
I don't know that we talked like we.
Okay.
He got elected, so he couldn't have been hated at least from the get go.
He got elected in Massachusetts. Yes.
Right.
Isn't it possible?
The rest of the
isn't it possible?
yeah.
Says Ted. Isn't it possible that the Dixiecrat recruited GOP is fighting against Trump because they realize they may lose the Senate if Trump is their candidate and not because he is a loudmouth racist? How about all of the above? You know, possibilities.
Yeah. And that's he actually it. Seems to be the Dixiecrat candidate.
You know, would appear so. Yeah. Good morning, panel. I think Mitt would make a great candidate. His fingers are the right length and he's the right height, too.
He's got great hair.
Have you noticed that some of the rallies, they're now selling wigs, Trump wigs.
Yeah.
So these guys are walking around with these, you know, bushy, you know, yellow hair on top of, which reminds me a little bit,
that's
because I'm older than everybody in this room,
yes.
of Estes Kefauver.
Oh, yeah.
And why is that important? Because Estes Kefauver, the man from Kentucky, had a coonskin cap.
Yeah.
And everybody in my neighborhood had a coonskin cap as a result. But, of course, you guys wouldn't know.
I thought that was a Daniel Boone thing. But
it was Daniel Boone. But, you see, Daniel Boone was from that part of the country.
And his political buttons, is it Kefauver or Kefauver?
I've always said Kefauver.
Okay, so in the Kefauver political button, it would say his name. And then there was a little homemade coonskin
yeah.
cap that would go right over the top of the pin that would come down. And that was his. And people would wear those all.
And
who supported him, which wasn't many.
Right,
but yeah.
No, there wasn't many. And remember Adlai Stevenson.
With the hole in his shoe.
The hole in his shoe.
Right.
That poor guy, he really thought that he had a chance to beat Eisenhower. The man who brought us through World War II, that was a tough one.
So you look at that, you have a hole in your shoe and that loses you the election. You scream.
In his case, it was because he was divorced. Now,
well, yes.
Today, you could have three wives and divorce them all. not mentioning anybody in particular, but it doesn't matter anymore.
It does not seem to, no. All right.
Even among the
evangelicals?
Yeah.
No, they don't could care less.
Yeah.
Well, they don't. I mean, they're. Many are supporting Trump.
Yeah, they are.
So, go ahead, Alan, and we'll take a couple more letters, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
M says, I have not heard you talk about the constitutional provision that the House of Representatives selects a president from the available candidates if no one gets enough electoral votes to win the presidency. Perhaps the Republicans will run a third-party candidate in hopes of splitting electoral votes and kicking the election to the House. We have talked about that, and we've talked about it several times. But okay, point made, point played. Where do you hear that, Bridge? okay, you know.
It's going to be an exciting political year, no doubt about it.
Well, it already is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you would think when Gore, in my mind, was robbed of the election, there are those who don't think that's true, but in my mind, he was definitely robbed of the election. You would think, as in, you know, places like Brazil or maybe Argentina, there people would have gotten out in the streets with pots and pans and banged, and no, nothing doing. It's the way the system works. There was almost no reaction at all.
I think there was that trust in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
As an institution.
Well, you may be right. Okay, now. Correction. Keith Faber was from Tennessee. Absolutely right. Like Alan, I'm old enough to remember him. Keith Faber hearings. He had hearings, and we were on television. We watched all day long. They were about drugs and I think drug manufacturers. I don't remember the whole thing, but Sean, love the show. Could the Republican power brokers be concerned because Trump will take some, if not a lot, of their power? I happen to think, Sean, that's what it's all about. I think the regular establishment is concerned that he will be uncontrollable, that he'll do what he wants, and that, you know, he'll appoint who he wants, and that they won't have the kind of say that they've had in the past.
Yeah, it's probably part of it, and I think part of it is that he doesn't agree with them on most of the issues, too. I mean, I think, you know, to them it's alarming to have a candidate who gave to Rahm Emanuel and Andrew Cuomo and all these other people. It seems reasonable to me, too. I can't imagine the Democrats nominating a candidate who gave to, you know, Ron Paul or to Paul Ryan or any of the Republican candidates.
Our writers are fixating on the coonskin hat.
Yes, it's always the major issues that our listeners
are going to come up with.
Oh, Davy Crockett.
Davy Crockett, yeah. We know that, promoted incessantly by Disney.
I remember that.
Movie with Fess Parker.
Yeah.
And then there's a word that I don't know. It's execrable. Execrable. Execrable.
I think it's a fancy word for poop, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the song. It's that Davy Crockett song, the Disney Davy Crockett song. Which
I think
Stu is not wrong on that.
What'd you say?
Well, it can. What do they call it? A poop song. You're right. Yeah, song. I guess that's what they call it.
Okay.
One more and we'll take a break.
Christie spends so much time behind Trump. Do you think he's looking for the vice presidential spot?
He was looking for the exit, quite frankly.
I would like to see Bernie and Liz Warren for the Dems. Bernie and Liz Warren. Sure way to lose an election for the Dems. You got to get the middle, folks. I'm sorry. I'm a Bernie fan. Okay? I voted for him. But, you know, you got to get the middle. And if you don't get the middle, you lose. It's that simple. And if you lose... There goes the Supreme Court.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back with Alan and Judy and Chris. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Well, we talked about the Supreme Court and the vacancy on the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, the court is doing business. The Supreme Court appeared splintered on Wednesday during arguments in a major abortion case that could affect the lives of millions of American women. The court's four liberal justices were adamant that restrictions imposed by a Texas law on the state's abortion providers serve no medical purpose and could not pass constitutional muster. But two of the more conservative justices says there was little evidence that abortion clinics in Texas had closed or would close because of the law. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who almost certainly holds the crucial vote, said it would help to know how many abortions could be performed in clinics if the law were allowed to become fully effective, and mused that it might be useful to return the case to the lower courts to develop more evidence. And this from the New York Times story this morning.
Uh-huh. Now, if I read that article correctly, the lower court basically ruled for the legislature. So, in other words, the legislature passed this, in my mind, terrible law, which would mean that, you know, you had to meet all these standards. And there's no question that a lot of these places would be closed down, that do abortions
right
now.
Yeah, they have been closed.
Yeah, they have been closed. So if, in fact, it gets returned to the lower courts, Kennedy is taking a pretty good, you know, pretty political view here. He says, bring it back down to the lower courts and give them instructions to give you more stuff.
It also seems like a stall technique, too, where maybe he's just, you know, waiting for that fifth conservative to come back and then have it returned to the Supreme Court.
He's in a tough spot.
Yeah.
You know, because I view everything through a political lens and not basically jurisprudence. I think that, you know, he was appointed by the Republicans and he doesn't want to disappoint them. I think that's always been his number. Every once in a while, he gets his guts together and does the right thing. But in this case, he wants to avoid it.
You know, opponents of this law, one of their key points is the fact that this provision will make it far more difficult for people to obtain easy access, that women will have to drive 200 miles or more in many cases to reach a clinic. And that will be an impediment. And poor people especially have a hard time making that kind of trip. And they also argue that there are other kinds of clinics, like I think that do liposuction and colonoscopies, that aren't subject to the same kind of restriction. So those large arguments are out there. New York Times article that Joe sent us last night had some great maps that show how much farther people will have to drive under this law.
And if they have to, they will go some, not all, but some will go to the old maiming, solutions to getting rid of a child or having an abortion. And that won't be pretty. And then people will die. It'll be awful.
Although Justice Scalia's death last month may have muted the prospect of truly bold action in the case, even a 4-4 tie would have enormous consequences because it would leave in place the appeals court
Absolutely.
Decision.
Absolutely, just what I was saying.
Which
exactly
challengers
right.
say could drive down the number of abortion clinics in Texas to about 10 from roughly 40. On the other hand, Justice Scalia's death means the court is very unlikely to weaken constitutional standards affecting abortion in the rest of the nation, as the four liberal justices would not go along.
Well, Joe, if you're one of those Texas women, that's nice. This is established law. But on the other hand, you're really going to suffer. So that's the point.
Which brings us back to our earlier conversation of the importance of getting a justice on the court, correct?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let us go back to some letters.
Oh, yeah.
If you wish.
Sure. No. As I've said 1,000 times, you're the boss.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, no, we can't do that. Execrable is not a poop word. See below from West is unabridged. Obsolete, expressing a curse. Okay. Thank you for that. And can you please? No, we can't do that. I really like you, Joe, but please, could you find some other words, expressions to replace, quote, screw?
Oh, I have two or three, but I can't use those either.
Let's do our part to bring in civility in all its forms back to our daily lives. Thank you, B.
Is
Campbell.
Is screw incivil? Uncivil?
Yeah, well, no, it's a very important word. I use it all the time. You know, I say the Republicans are screwing the Democrats. That is true. And when somebody said, well, it's a dirty word, no, it's not. You know, you take a screw and a screwdriver.
A few different meanings, yeah.
Yeah. And screw to the wall, that kind of thing.
I deny it.
Okay.
All right.
But thank you. I understand.
Thank you. We love your letters. Can you please tell me? Oh, no. This keeps coming back. It's okay. I just don't get it.
Bad penny.
Okay. Alan, I wanted to. Oh, no. No. No, no, no. Who played Davy Crockett? We already said so. Fess Parker. Roger Miller. Alan, the roundtable stands for nothing if not for truth, surely. Read the New York Times, November 12, 2001, which counters that contention in detail too much for here that Gore was basically robbed, says Roger. Okay. I have to just read.
Everybody out there should know we were singing the Davy Crockett song during
the break. Yes, we had a sing-along.
Are you going to discuss the three black women who faked an attack by whites on a bus? Well, that's still an allegation. Chris, you've written a good deal on this.
I have. We can discuss it if you guys
I mean,
want.
We have discussed it, and we certainly have covered it extensively on the news. But yes, go ahead.
But it did make the front page of the New York Times yesterday.
Was it on the front page? I didn't realize that.
No, maybe not the front page.
Yeah, well,
it was over the week.
A major article.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a dramatic story. You had three women who claimed that they were attacked on a bus by as many as 20 white men and women, and the story is turning out not to be true, according to all the available evidence we've seen so far.
And one of the more interesting parts of this story has the fact that it's resurfaced the old Tawana Brawley story. And,
It certainly has. That's a name that I cannot believe how much I've heard in the last few weeks.
Me either.
I didn't realize how raw a wound that still was, but almost every email that I get on this subject, and I've gotten a lot, mentions her. It's almost 30 years ago.
Exactly.
It's like amazing that people still...
It's terrible because what it does is it, because of the foolishness, if this is true, that and they've been basically brought before the bar of justice by the DA on this, if it's true that they really messed up, it does tremendous harm to all of those women who have absolutely good ground to bring charges, and somebody says, oh, you know, there are, you know, people that keep doing this. So it's not good.
Right. Every victim, or maybe not, hopefully not, but it definitely will make people look more skeptically at the next claim. And, that ultimately could be the worst of it. And, you know, they cause an awful lot of unnecessary tension on that campus and a lot of... angst, and I mean, there was a major rally in support of the women, and I think a lot of the people who spoke at the rally now feel a little foolish. I mean, it's a very messy situation.
You're right. Okay, so here Brian says Christie spent so much time behind Trump. We did that one a long time ago. So then there were other letters, some of which I have not read. For example, I'll give you an example of a letter I didn't read. One from George.
All right. We have about a minute. So
he wants
ahead.
To tell us all about what Imus did on his show about Trump.
Oh, that's good.
So that's why I didn't read it. You know, because fine, that's good. And that's basically what I got.
All right. We thank you very much for your letters. We love your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And even more than that, we love the fact that Judy Patrick and Chris Churchill are here this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Great to have you both great. Here. Always a treat when you're here.
Great to be here.
Alan, thank you very much as always. And we'll be back tomorrow for another panel. And we will continue the roundtable after the short break.